If you haven't tuned into the Stone Chapel podcast before, you're in for a treat. Mark Lanier, the founder of the Lanier Theological Library, along with his sweet wife, Becky, is with us to talk about a learning center the Lanier Foundation is establishing in Oxford, England. It's called Yarnton Manor because the manor house was called Yarnton Manor, and it was built in 1611, the same year the King James Bible was first published. My name is David Capes, and I'm the director of the Lanier Theological Library in Houston. It's an exciting project, and Mark Lanier is here to talk about it next on the Stone Chapel. Joining me today on the Stone Chapel is Mark Lanier. Mark, great to be with you today.
David, so good to be with you on this wonderful podcast. I hope your listeners listen to everyone. You always ask great questions.
We're going to talk today about Yarnton Manor. For those who don't know Yarnton Manor, haven't heard of Yarnton, what is it?
Well, Yarnton is a town. It's spelled like a ton of yarn, Y-A-R-N-T-O-N. Yarnton is a town about 4 miles northwest of Oxford proper in England. And it is...
Not Oxford, Mississippi.
No, not to be confused. A different Oxford. And it is a town of great antiquity. Mm. It is very, very old. In fact, the manor house that we'll be talking about is on property, and on the back of the property is an Anglo-Saxon burial ground that dates from about 500 AD.
Wow.
So it's quite an old place.
Now, the Yarnton Manor itself, when was that built?
The actual manor house was built in 1611.
That's the year of the King James Bible.
The precise same. And it's also interesting in that it was built by William Spencer. Now, he was the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather of Princess Diana Spencer.
Oh, Lady Diana.
Lady Di. And so it was the old family home from the 1600s, if you will.
So it has all the charm and beauty of that era, I guess.
It does. And right now we're in the middle of refurbishing it and putting it back to the best condition that we can do. But it's got beautiful manicured grounds. It's got a sunken hidden garden. It's got 10 or 11 outbuildings, some of which date to great antiquity as well. There is a church that is basically on the grounds, but the church itself is still owned by the Church of England, the building and the cemetery. Hmm. That church dates from the Norman times. It's a 1000 AD church right there on the grounds.
Wow, amazing. So what was the decision like to invest in that in the future?
We were approached when the Oxford Center for Jewish Studies was initially selling the building. They'd been there for 40 plus years, and they sought to sell it in 2014 to move closer into the city of Oxford. And we didn't think the time was right at the time. It just didn't strike us as something that we needed to be doing. But then the manor and its environs came up for sale again in the COVID summer of 2021. And at that point in time, we thought, you know, we've got so many things going on through our library foundation and project that may be the pristine moment for us to expand and open those doors over in Europe, starting with the UK. And so we negotiated, we were able to buy it, and already have been amazed at how many different groups and how many different people are reaching out saying, we'd like to use that for the good of the kingdom.
So one of the connections you have there is with Wycliffe Hall. Michael Lloyd was here lecturing recently and is a great friend of the library. And tell us a little bit about that relationship, that partnership.
When we initially were approached by folks about buying Yarnton Manor, we were under a tight deadline because there were two other interested parties that were bidding for it. Mm. And there was a motivated seller who needed to get out sooner than later. And so we knew we had to move almost immediately. And the initial question became, do we know that we could use this place enough to justify doing all that needed to be done to add it to the foundation's resources? And so our first phone call went out to Michael Lloyd at Wycliffe Hall. Now, Wycliffe Hall is one of the evangelical colleges associated with Oxford University, and Michael Lloyd is the principal, or the CEO, in a sense, of that college. Right. And we said, do you personally have enough interest in us acquiring this and making it available for Wycliffe to use such that we should start talking about it more? And he said, boy, it seems to me just an absolute answer to a lot of prayers right now for Wycliffe Hall. And he said, let me get my other key decision makers involved and let's get a good Zoom call together. And so we did. And we knew that Wycliffe had hoops to jump through, that you can't make decisions like this on a whim or a fancy. Exactly. And so, but we knew that there was enough momentum and captive interest in pursuing it that we thought it would bear fruit. Mm-hmm. And so that gave us the freedom to go ahead and make the necessary moves to get Yarnton. And then Wycliffe Hall has come along, and they're excited. Now they're going to put their graduate school students there and have that program there. And it's a pretty thrilling thing.
That's an exciting development. And Wycliffe Hall, their mission seems to be so consonant with ours, right? I mean, it just seems to work together. As you think about it in the future, what's over there to see? I mean, we got the Manor House, obviously. That's going to be fabulous. But there's also going to be a library, right?
Yeah, we've taken this building that's also hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years old. It's called the Tithe Barn. Now, they spell that T-Y-T-H-E.
Oh, like the tithe of to the church or something.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And okay. Except this was the tithe to the manor, the Lord of the Manor. Mm. And so all of the farmers...
You're not going to be called Lord of the Manor.
Oh, heavens no, they wouldn't give that to an American. This was the barn where all of the farmers and the others would bring their tithe, which hundreds and hundreds of years ago was not in currency. It was often in product. Mm. And so they'd bring their grain, they'd bring their corn, they'd bring their oats, they'd bring their whatever.
So that building is still on the property.
It's still on the property. It's an incredible building. We're in the middle of about a one-year project to turn it into just a spectacular library that hopefully will hold at least 40, 50,000 volumes, maybe a few more.
Now, part of what you had to do to acquire the property was to establish a charitable organization there.
Correct. We formed what I like to call the sister foundation to the U.S. Foundation. Mm. And so we've got three of our U.S. Foundation board members on that board, but we've also added two British people to be on the board as well. So we've got a total of five right now on that board. And the British people are just marvelous, godly people. We're so excited to be able to interface and work with them in this project.
When you think about the future, we talked about the library. There's going to be a wonderful library there that'll be built, and it'll be working together with other libraries in the area. Do you see yourself going over there maybe to lecture from time to time, to speak or invite, like you do here at the Lanier Theological Library in Houston? You see lecturers coming in to give lectures? Do you see groups coming in to study for a time?
Absolutely. The property itself has about 160 beds.
160?
Yeah, so we're able to put a lot of people in for various things. I know that our church, for example, is talking about doing a one-week training program for pastors over there, where we take pastors over for in one-week installments and take 40, 50 pastors over, and we have some of the more helpful and informative speakers from Oxford and from around the world that come in and for a week do an intensive educational experience. And if our church is interested in that, I know that there'll be a lot of other churches that will be interested in the same type thing. So we'll have lecturers for groups like that. We've got a number of seminaries, Truett Seminary at Baylor, we've been talking to, and others that are interested in putting together summer programs and things like that. And then the community itself, we're hoping that we can be a host of a number of different events. Of course, when you're in Oxfordshire, which is Oxford County, for lack of a better way of saying it,
sure.
When you're in Oxford, you've got lots of people speaking on lots of issues throughout all of those colleges at various times. And we hope to be yet another place that features such speakers.
Now, you talked about pastors and church leaders coming over for training, but there's also a willingness for other scholars to come and to learn there, to work there, to have conferences there. In fact, I think we've already set one up. Pastor David and I have been talking about that for the summer of, I think, 2023. Yeah, so that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, you know, you and between you and Pastor David, y'all are such creative thinkers with such a long reach into different areas of the kingdom that I'm thrilled to watch what's happened. I know Greater European Missions is talking about having an annual conference there. I know that Tyndall House is talking about maybe being able to use that for some outreach in some specific ways. Lipscomb University, where I serve as a trustee, is talking about in 2023 having the trustees meeting over there. There'll be a lot of groups because there's a natural attraction to go to Oxford, this city of antiquity and some of the best of English-speaking scholastic study for almost 1,000 years now.
And it's one of the most beautiful sections, too, of England. There it is, kind of at the edge, is it, of the Cotswolds?
Yeah, yeah. Some will put it in the Cotswolds. Some don't put it in the Cotswolds. But if it's not, it's a stone's throw away.
Stone's throw, exactly. Yeah. Mark, as you think about the future of the church, the future of the church's engagement with the world, how do you see this particular center in Yarnton connecting to the church and the West, scholars, churchmen, but also the changing culture around us?
I think this has potential to fill a role in two different directions. Let me explain what I mean. I think it will be a point of confluence where people who are influential in the kingdom all come together to figure out ways to impact the world for Christ and to communicate the genuine Christian message of love and truth and faithfulness. And so as people come together, it's a brilliant place for that. But I think it's not just a direction of confluence where people come together. I think this is also going to be a place of emanation where we have people, for example, some churches that I know of who want to go over and, for lack of a better way of saying it, just use this as a mission point to be able to start from Yarnton Manor and serve the community of Yarnton for Christ and to reach out into them and try and let them see the importance of God playing a role in their lives, and then from there, going out beyond Yarnton and just reaching out so that this becomes the center point for an explosive reach around the globe. So it's a dual direction in my mind. People will come in from around the globe to this place, but this will also be a place that on its own becomes the source of sending out around the globe.
Some people say we're living today in kind of a post-Christian culture, that in fact Christianity is not as relevant as it was before. But all of your work, it seems like, the work that you do in law, the work that you've, the books that you've written, the work that you've invested in this place here in Houston and in Yarnton, is describing a vastly different worldview of a God who is involved in the world, of a God who can be with us through thick and thin. And it strikes me that your example as a human being and as a businessman with your own law firm, but as a Christian and a family man, speaks at a different level, that this is not, in fact, a post-Christian culture, that we are living gospel life even now and can do so.
The analogy that comes to my mind is after King Nebuchadnezzar from Babylon conquered Judah and Jerusalem, he carted off so many, most of the Jews that were surviving, and he took them to Babylonia. And in a very real sense, they might have said, we're now living in a post-Jewish world. Mm-hmm. We are post-Jerusalem. We are post-temple. The temple's been destroyed. The priesthood has been decimated. Our king has been deposed. We no longer live in the Judaic world that we lived in. We're in a post-Judaic world. Yes, and yet no, because God said through Ezekiel and others, when you get over there in Jeremiah, you know, plant your gardens, do your work. You're going to be here for a while, but while you're here, you're still going to be worshiping me, and you're still going to be my people, and I will work a redemption that takes back what I've given you before. And so the people were able to do their things, and in some ways, modern scholastics have indicated that it was during that Babylonian captivity that people began to better understand and better try to follow the law and the Torah and so many other things. They rediscovered it because they had to find their communication and nexus with God apart from the temple cult that they had been attending at some level in Jerusalem. That's been destroyed. Those priests have been destroyed. Those sacrifices are being offered no more. And so how then do you relate to God? And they realized we relate to God by following his instructions, his Torah, as best as we can. And that rebirth allowed, even in the midst of a post-Judaic world for them, it allowed them to be more Jewish, in a sense, than they ever were before. And I think we see that now. We may not live in a culture and in a climate where things are decided based upon what the Bible says it should be. Mm-hmm. But we are still living in a place where we can vibrantly live and express our faith and seek to serve our God in all that we do, not simply by walking in a society where kids have mandatory prayer in school.
We're living in a different day. And I really see Yarnton, and I really see the work of the Lanier Theological Library, both projects, as fitting into an opportunity to tell that story again and again, and to relive that story, and to encourage people to live into the kingdom.
I think you're a good example of that as well, and I thank you for all that you do. I'm remiss if I don't let your listeners know that you are so much of the muscle behind what we are doing as a group. And we're appreciative of the way you muscle it out there and get it done. I like to think that this is an expression, if I can borrow from Francis Schaeffer, of the phrase true spirituality. And that is using all that we've got and all that we are to try and express the importance of love, work, fellowship, worship, and those other core tasks that God has called every human being to.
So what's next for Mark Lanier on the writing front? I know you've just finished Atheism on Trial, but
yeah,
you've got another book.
2023, hopefully, we'll see World Religions on Trial coming out. And then I'm talking to Baylor right now about a third devotional series book. So we've got Psalms for Living and Torah for Living. And this will be Christ for Life for Living. And it'll be a devotional book based upon the church calendar that's driven from the teachings of Jesus.
So the annual calendar of the church.
Oh, yes, really? And so wonderful. During Advent, you'll read devotionals based on Advent. During Pentecost, based on Pentecost. During Easter, based on Easter. During the dry summer days, based upon dry summer days. And
some churches call that ordinary time.
Ordinary time is exactly what it is called in the church calendar.
But so much of life is lived in ordinary time. And how to live, not necessarily in the festival, but live, between festivals.
So it won't be, Lent.
That's
during
fine.
Lent.
I haven't heard about that. That's a great project.
Well, I've got about 80% of the devotionals written, so I've got about 20% to go.
All right. So one last question before we go is, if people want to know more about Yarnton Manor, where would they go right now?
I think what they need to do is stay alert on our library website, because we'll be rolling out announcements there. So that's www.laniertheologicallibrary.org. And if they're not on that, they need to be on that anyway to see what lectures are coming up and to see what the latest is. But we will be keeping our internet buddies up through that website.
Yeah, that's probably the best way for right now. And sooner or later, there'll be a website for Yarnton Manor, the project over there as well.
That is true, and we'll get that up, and that'll be running, I suspect, probably within a few more months.
Very good. Mark Lanier, thanks for being with us today on the Stone Chapel.
Thank you.
Thanks to Kathy Capes, Jocelyn Solis, and Janet Seifert for helping us to produce this podcast. Thanks to Phil Keggy for our music. Please subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform. Tell others, come back often. If you have questions or comments, check the show notes below for the best way to be in touch. And thanks for listening.